Inside Florida Politics, the essential podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming to you from the heart of the 561, our studio in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I'm joined by Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson.
Hey, George.
And the third part of our podcast crew is Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy. But John Kennedy's on assignment this week, so you just got me and Zach. So let's get right to it. I feel pretty confident in saying this is going to be one of the strongest podcasts we've ever done.
We made it to number two, at least. They didn't pull the plug after number one, so that's a good sign.
It is the second podcast, and I feel like this is absolutely one of the strongest ones just based on the lineup we got. You know, the primary day is coming up August 28th, Tuesday. Already nearly 1.4 million Floridians have already cast ballots in that thing. Do you see any draw any significance from the voting turnout so far, Zach?
You know, I think it's kind of a Rorschach test. People are taking away what they want from it. Democrats are saying that they've already beat their numbers from the 2014 midterm election when it comes to early voting and absentee voting. But Republicans are winning overall when you look at, you know, the share of the vote that they have versus, you know, their turnout versus Democratic turnout. So I think both parties right now have, you know, some talking points.
There you go. Yeah, about 47% of the people that have voted so far, either by mail or at the early voting sites, have been Republican, and about 42% of them have been Democrats. And that's roughly what the percentage wise was in 2014, the last midterm primary.
So who knows? Really, yeah. Looking at this to see if, you know, the Democratic turnout is going to be strong and you know, if there's going to be a blue wave. And I'm not sure that I think it's kind of too early to really tell here.
Right. Too soon to tell. Let's wait till it's all in, and then we have the benefit of hindsight, and then we can all sound like real experts on it. Now, we have a tradition here on the podcast. It's called Pick a Number. And Zach, what is your number this week?
My number is 50, the big 50.
50. Okay. All right. Strong. I'm going with a prime number this week. My number is 19. Now, listeners, you'll want to hang on through the podcast, which I'm sure you would anyways, but at the end of the podcast, we'll explain the significance of those numbers. So, and if you're taking notes, Zach Anderson is coming in with a 50, 50, and George Bennett, that's me, I am coming with a 19. So keep those in mind as we discuss the podcast. Now, real briefly, I want to start, you know, kind of headlines, national headlines, but every national story has impact in Florida. This week, we saw in the space of about an hour, one afternoon, we saw Paul Manafort convicted on 8 counts in his trial up in Virginia. And then Michael Cohen, the Donald Trump's personal lawyer, pled guilty to some charges. Pretty big news day. Zach, what do you draw from that? What does that mean for Florida? Because Florida is the center of the universe.
Of course. And I think that the Trump story is a big Florida story. It's a huge story for our elections. You know, as Trump goes, so does the GOP. And you're already hearing some nervousness among Republicans that this is going to hurt Trump. And there was a New York Times story today that came out that said that Republican leaders are encouraging Republican Congress members who are in competitive districts to start putting some distance between themselves and Trump. And according to the story, it said sort of right on cue, Carlos Curbelo, who's one of the more endangered Republicans in the country, Miami congressman in a district that Clinton carried by, I think, double digits, came out with a statement that said this is a sad chapter in our country's politics and no one is above the law, and you know, encouraged Trump not to keep ripping into the special counsel investigation. So I think the biggest impact in the primary would be on Ron DeSantis, because he's so closely tied to Trump, endorsed by Trump. But DeSantis is not backing away from Trump at all. He tweeted that he was very proud to have the president's endorsement. So I think looking ahead to the general election, we'll see if Trump sinks in popularity because of this, and if it hurts Republicans on the ballot in November.
Sure. Now, Carlos Curbelo is kind of the prime suspect for Republicans criticizing Trump. So he's not a shocker that he would come out with a distancing statement. Another potentially competitive race here is over in Palm Beach County in the Treasure Coast. Brian Mast, freshman Republican member of the House. And for what it's worth, yesterday I reached out to his office to see if he had any comment on the Manafort and Cohen stuff, and they didn't get back to me. Now, I didn't. I had a bunch of other stuff going on, so I wasn't like dogging him all day, but at least not an eagerness out of Brian Mast to weigh in on it. But we'll see how that plays out. Now, but let's get more to the to what's closer at hand, and that's the primaries coming up. And, you know, depending on what party you're in or which part of the state you're in, I guess everybody has a different, might have a different race that they're really focused on. As for me, speaking for the political junkie community, I think the primary that I'm most fascinated in is the pollster primary. That is to see which pollster got it right and which ones didn't in the poll numbers for this primary, because as is often the case, the polls have really been all over the map in the Republican and Democratic primaries for governor. So just to give you an example, I think, Zach, you wrote about, we both wrote about a poll by FAU last week. Do you recall the numbers in that one?
Yeah, that poll was probably most interesting because it had Adam Putnam behind Ron DeSantis by just a percentage point. I think it was DeSantis at 32% support and Putnam at 31% support. But the poll got a fair bit of criticism. I think the Republican sample size was only 222 voters. So the folks were wondering if you can draw much of a conclusion from that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That poll had So that poll had the Republican race within the margin of error, which, there's been certainly a perception that DeSantis was pulling away with that. And on the Democratic side, FAU had Gwen Graham leading the field 29-17 for Philip Levine in the Democratic primary. And I don't even think the Graham people believe they're up that much. But just to put it in context, so just in the past week, St. Pete polls over in St. Petersburg had the race, the Democratic side, Graham 27, Levine 25, and Gillum surging at 21, and we'll talk about Gillum in a minute. Tom Eldon, you may remember, attentive podcast listeners may remember, we mentioned his poll last week. He's a Democrat, not working for any of the campaigns. His latest poll has Levine at 26, Graham 25, so that's virtually a tie.
Pretty good sample size there too, 669 voters. And Tom, I think you and I both know Tom George. He's considered a very respected pollster. And so that was an interesting number to see Levine up by a point over Graham.
Right. So he and St. Pete polls basically have got a dead heat. FAU's got Graham way up. Gillum's campaign released its own poll showing that Andrew Gillum is up 33-22 over. They had both Levine and Graham at 22, and they had Gillum at 33. And then, another one last week, St. Leo's University had Gwen Graham at 26, Levine at 19. And then also there was a Survey USA poll of the Democrats. This was maybe last week. This is a little bit old, but in August, that had Levine 22, Graham 22 tied. So you have a couple pollsters saying that the Democratic race is tied. You have Gillum's people saying that their guy is up, and you have the FAU poll saying that Graham is pulling away with it. So, we'll see next week who was right. I do think, as I mentioned on the podcast last week, I definitely see a lot of upside potential for Gillum in that, as we mentioned, he had the late Bernie Sanders tour last week. late.
It just seems like he is kind of where a lot of Democrats, at least primary voting Democrats, are. You know, he's right, the most right. progressive candidate. He definitely, you go to these activist events and there's a lot of Gillum supporters there amongst the Democrats.
Sure. So a Gillum surge potentially, and he's had very little money. So it's taken him longer to get his message out. Gillum's people released a poll this morning, a University of North Florida poll, and it was just for Congressional District 5, which is a very heavily Democratic congressional district, and at least among Democrats, I think it's majority Black. And it was a poll of a congressional primary there, but within the sample, they found Gillum leading in that congressional district, 31-18, which I just think it's interesting that the Gillum folks are really trying to gin up, the idea of momentum here in the final days of the race. And just real quickly on the Republican side. So we mentioned that FAU poll that had basically a dead heat between DeSantis and Putnam. St. Leo's actually had Putnam up over DeSantis. There was a Survey USA poll that had the two of them in a virtual tie. And Mason Dixon, I know this was a few weeks ago, but they had DeSantis with a double digit lead. I think the DeSantis people are pretty confident that they have a comfortable lead.
I think the Republican side, George, is maybe the most interesting. I think we sort of all have this sense that the Democratic side is a little bit in flux, and that it could be any of these maybe top three candidates who kind of surges here at the end. And it's not so surprising maybe that you see polls with one on top and then the next day you see another one on top. On the Republican side, it really seemed like the narrative was shifting towards DeSantis with Trump's endorsement, and you had a bunch of polls that showed him with double digit leads. And then now in the last week or so, you've seen a number of polls that have shown the race much closer, and there's questions about the accuracy of those polls. But the Survey USA poll, I mean, I read something from the Florida Phoenix, Mitch Perry, who's a respected political reporter in the state, went and looked it up and found that Survey USA has historically been, quote, more on target than any national public pollster over the years, with an accuracy rate of 90%. And that poll had Putnam behind DeSantis by just 2 points. So maybe the race is a little bit closer than some people really think.
Right. Well, that's why I said as a political junkie, and that which I am admitted, my name is George, I'm a political junkie. That's why I'm very interested in just seeing politicians come and go, but I'm interested in seeing which pollsters really nailed it. So we'll find that out. We'll find that out next week. Now, you and I both, Zach, had the opportunity to see Adam Putnam on the campaign trail this week. And I want to roll one of our sound engineers, Thomas Cordy, is going to cue up a clip of Adam Putnam over in, I believe this is Bradenton, at an event you were at. So let's roll the sound here, and then I want you to talk a little
bit
about it.
That's what candidates are supposed to do. Run on a plan so that there's no surprises. This is what I'm going to do if you elect me. My opponent's running on an endorsement. No plan, no vision, no agenda. Just an endorsement. Just hanging on to the coattails. It takes more than that to lead the state of Florida. You deserve better. You deserve better. Afford to have a governor who calls the White House every morning and says, "What are we going to do today, boss?"
Yeah. There you go. I like that last Adam. That last little sound there, Adam Putnam channeling his 19th century prospector voice, imitating Ron DeSantis calling the White House and saying, "What are we going to do today, boss?" Tell me a little bit about that. What does that show about the dynamic of this Republican primary, Zach?
Well, Trump's endorsement of DeSantis has really bedeviled Putnam, and he doesn't quite know, I think, how to address it, because, you know, he wants to sort of undermine it, wants to kind of find a way to make the endorsement seem less important, but he doesn't want to criticize Trump, who Republican voters absolutely adore. So he's taken to trying to say that DeSantis doesn't have anything else besides the endorsement, that, you know, he's not running on a plan. He's just running on coattails, Trump's coattails. And so trying to say that DeSantis doesn't have any substance, which is a way to kind of knock down DeSantis without directly criticizing Trump. The most important thing, most interesting thing to me about that quote that you played, George, was the comment where he said, you know, you need somebody who's in the governor's mansion who doesn't have to call up the White House every day and say, what are we going to do today, boss? And that really stuck out to me. You know, he was kind of saying that DeSantis is sort of, you know, it doesn't really have anything going for him and that he's just going to, you know, take his cues from the president. And the way I termed it was that, you know, DeSantis is kind of a puppet for the president is what it sounded to me like Putnam was saying. And the campaign really pushed back on that. I think they thought that might be too negative and that somehow that made it seem like they were criticizing Trump you know, they didn't like the term puppet, but it just shows how sensitive they are about this issue and how fine of a line they're trying to walk in trying to undermine this endorsement while at the same time not criticize Trump.
Right. Yeah. Now, and that was, I believe, Tuesday night that you saw that, right?
Yeah. Tuesday morning at a Up and Adam breakfast in Bradenton. And
yeah. So I saw Putnam the following evening over in Palm Beach County. And he did not use the call the White House and what do we do today, boss, or whatever that line was. But he did the same. You know, he said, you know, he was contrasting. He was saying he supports Trump and Trump is doing all these things he said he would do because Trump had a plan. But his opponent, and actually, I don't think he actually uttered the name DeSantis at all during his appearance. But you know, he said, my opponent doesn't have a plan. He just has an endorsement. Similar line there. But yeah, he you know, walking the tightrope there of wanting to criticize the president's chosen candidate without criticizing the president because Trump remains very popular among Republican primary voters. And just, you know, talking to a few of the folks at this Palm Beach County event last night, I know several of them, they were all, you know, they Trump supporters. And some of them said, you know, they were getting grief from their fellow Trump supporters for not supporting the president's chosen candidate in the primary.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the interesting attendees at this event, in Palm Beach County was the chairman of the Palm Beach County Republican Party, Michael Barnett, who is a big Trump guy. He emphasized to me about five times in the space of 10 minutes that he was just there in his personal, you know, capacity, not as the party chairman, but that he's a Putnam supporter. And he said, you know, he doesn't have a problem as much as he admires Trump that, you know, but he supports Putnam. But it's interesting just, you know, talking to these folks, the pains they take to differentiate, you know, I still support the president, but I support Adam Putnam. So it'll be curious to see, you know, how many folks. And the other thing was Carlos Lopez Quintero, the lieutenant governor, was at the event. And he suggested that he said, yeah, Trump's endorsement was big, but maybe it came too early. Maybe it's wearing off. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, they like to talk about the Trump bump sort of leveling off. Just a little tidbit from the Putnam event that I was at in Bradenton. Nick Walenda, who is famous in the Sarasota, but also around the country as an acrobat, wire walker, tightrope walker, who has done televised specials where he walks across the Grand Canyon and Niagara Falls, was there supporting Putnam. The last time I saw Nick Walenda was at a Trump rally in Sarasota in 2016. He's a big Trump guy, but he said Putnam's a homegrown Florida boy, and so am I, and so I'm going with him. So that was just a little factoid.
And I think he also admires the tightrope act that Putnam is doing in you know, embracing the president, but not the president's nominee. Just to go full circle.
Nicely
on that.
Done, George. Nicely done.
I beat that one to death. All right. Well, hey, let's talk also then about the Democratic primary. And here's another little sound actuality that Thomas Cordy, our sound engineer, is going to cue up for us. This is, let me just set the table for you here. This is at the Kings Point Democratic Club in West Delray, part of the important condo belt. If you're a Democrat, you really have to hit the condo belt of Palm Beach and Broward counties, Kings Point, Century Village, a couple of these big, large retirement communities that are heavily Democratic and where voting is a, you know, people turn out. It's a big highlight to go and vote in a primary. So Democrats flock to these places. And so the other day, both Philip Levine and Jeff Green, who have been bashing each other in television ads, both showed up at the Kings Point Democratic Club meeting. And here's a little flavor of what happened.
I can tell you this. We're not going to take on Trump by passing the gray poupon across the table at his country club at Mar-a-Lago, okay? That's just not how it's going to happen. We're going to take care of Donald Trump by actually winning an election.
Jeff, you get a chance to answer that.
You know, again, I don't want to answer this, but I think we already have one angry, aggressive bully in Washington. We don't need another one in this election.
There you go. So there you go. Philip Levine. And I like the way he really punched up that gray poupon in his comment. But he's basically hitting Jeff Green, saying you're a member of Mar-a-Lago and, you know, you're not going to take on Trump, as you claim, if you're, you know, paying dues to his club. And the voice in the middle there was former state representative Irv Schlossberg, who was serving as moderator for the event. And then Jeff Green chimes in by calling Philip Levine an angry, aggressive bully. Thought it was an interesting exchange. You know, a lot of these races, I mean, let's face it, most voters are going to see these candidates on TV and through their TV ads. And these guys were really savaging each other on TV. So they got an opportunity to actually do it in person. It was kind of interesting to see that.
It seems to me like, you know, the point that each of them are making has, you know, obviously there's some truth to it. Levine got criticized for pushing back really hard against some folks who did not like what was happening with the pumping of flood water from Miami Beach. And there was a scientific survey and the Miami Herald wrote about it. And he went after them and criticized some of the science and the reporting. And so people started calling him a bully because of that. And obviously, it's kind of funny that Jeff Green, who is getting actually paying money to Trump through his Mar-a-Lago club, has set himself up as such a antagonist of the president.
I think if Jeff Green doesn't win this primary, I think one of his big disappointments is going to be that Donald Trump did not kick him out of Mar-a-Lago, because I think he was kind of hoping to get kicked out and get some headlines for that to boost his anti-Trump cred, because he has been really going after President Trump. But there you go. So that's the that's just a little flavor of the Democratic race. Now the third person that was those were the only two candidates there, Green and Levine. But Bob Graham, former governor and the father of Gwen Graham, attended the meeting. And you know, arguably, he came out as the winner of that that whole thing, because Green and Levine kind of were sniping at each other, and Bob Graham was able to kind of appear to be above the fray. So for whatever that was worth, any other thoughts on the Democratic primary? What are you looking for Tuesday, or what should politics watchers look for as a sign on Tuesday, Zach?
I think watching Gillum and seeing how, you know, the Republican Party has obviously moved to the right quite a bit. The Democratic Party, you know, under Bernie, the Bernie-crats have not taken over the party. You know, Hillary was able to put that insurrection down, and some of the progressives are still pretty upset. They think that a stronger, more progressive candidate would, you know, actually do better in a general election. It's been a big debate within the party that they've gone more with centrist candidates in recent years and struggled in Florida especially. So does the party really start to move more to the left and rally around a candidate like Bernie, or do they stick with more of a, you know, kind of an establishment type like Gwen Graham or Philip Levine?
Kind of the eternal Democratic debate. And it's interesting, you know, so Gwen Graham, certainly the biggest liabilities she's had in the Democratic primary have been, you know, that she voted for the Keystone Pipeline. She voted to ease some of the Dodd-Frank financial restrictions. You know, a couple of votes that she took where she voted with Republicans in the House during her one term in Congress. And those she's been criticized for those in the Democratic primary. If she wins the primary, though, you know, on Wednesday, the day after the election, those things suddenly become assets to her because they, you know, help.
Like Jeb Bush said, sometimes you have to lose the primary to win the general, except you can't actually lose the primary. You know, that usually the more centrist candidate, though, the candidate that has the broadest appeal is going to have a better chance in the general.
There you have it. So we'll certainly chew over that in our next podcast. Real quickly though, looking ahead to the general election, Rick Scott, Bill Nelson, enormous race, and there's been a little dust up between the two of them over Bill Nelson talking about Russian interference in Florida's voting systems. Zach, fill us in just a little bit on that.
This has been kind of a bizarre story, and it's become very politicized. But the root of it is so important. You know, the integrity of our election systems and the integrity of voting is just fundamental to our democracy, obviously. So it was a big deal when
overrated. No, I'm just of course.
So it was a big deal when Bill Nelson kind of let slip that the Russians were still, you know, involved in hacking Florida elections, and he said that, you know, they're actually in our Florida voting systems right now. His quote was, "The Russians are in Florida's election records, and that they had penetrated some voter registration systems," and this sort of set off alarm bells around the state. And I talked to election supervisors who were not sure what to make of it and didn't have any information that their systems at the county level had been compromised. And Rick Scott has really jumped on this and said, you know, if our elections are being hacked, Bill Nelson, you need to provide more evidence. We need to be able to protect ourselves and protect the vote. And so they've gone back and forth over this. Nelson has said that some of this information is classified, and there's been various reports that either support Nelson or question that. You know, there was an NBC report that said that there's some they were citing anonymous sources that said that there is classified information to support what Nelson said. But then just recently, just late Monday, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary and the FBI director responded to a letter from Secretary of State Ken Detzner and said, quote, "Although we have not seen new or ongoing compromises of state or local election infrastructure in Florida, Russian government actors have previously demonstrated both the intent and capability to conduct malicious cyber operations." So that seems to undercut Bill Nelson's claim that, you know, there's currently something going on where the election systems are compromised. But then Nelson's spokesman, Ryan Brown, put out a statement to the News Service of Florida that said, "In my opinion, there's nothing in this letter that contradicts what Senator Nelson said he was told a few months ago and what he and Senator Marco Rubio have tried to warn about in order to guard against Russian meddling in our election." So it seems like, you know, the Nelson folks are not conceding that they, you know, kind of overstretched what's happening. I guess this will continue to be an issue, but it sounds like at least the federal experts on this are saying that, no, there is not an ongoing or a current issue with hacking of our elections as we approach the August 28th primary.
So the FBI director and the Homeland Security director said it hasn't happened. There's no evidence of it, but those wily Ruskies are certainly capable of it, or they've tried to do it.
Exactly. New or ongoing compromises of state or local election infrastructure is the quote there. So I think Bill Nelson is going to continue to be asked about this. Scott has really gone after him hard on this and said that he's either, you know, leaked classified information or he's incorrect. And it's become one of the bigger political dust ups in this race over the last week and a half.
There you have it. But let's get back to our pick a number feature. Zach, why don't you go? If I recall correctly, you went with the number 50. Can you tell us the significance of that? 50.
So I was interviewing a professor at Florida Gulf Coast University, and I'm going to give a little bit of a plug here. If you are a Gatehouse subscriber or you live in one of our circulation areas, go out and pick up the Sunday paper, I'm going to have a story just about Trump's influence on the primary election here, because it's been pretty profound. And the reason I went with 50 is I was interviewing this professor, Peter Bergerson, at Florida Gulf Coast University. And this year, 2018, he has been a professor for 50 years now. He first became a professor in 1968, not at Florida Gulf Coast, but at another school. And he said, you know, so he's been tracking elections pretty closely for a half a century. And he said that he can't recall anything like this, where a president has been so involved in a primary that it is completely unprecedented and unheard of for the president to do this and to be picking candidates like this, like he did with Ron DeSantis over Adam Putnam. Usually presidents don't want to, you know, risk whatever blowback might come if the candidate loses, or risk angering the other candidate's supporters, or just risk injecting themselves into something and making this more about them than maybe some folks would like that. But as we all know, with Trump, it is all about Trump, and he has no problem getting involved in these primaries at all.
Wow. So half a century, this professor is saying unprecedented. He's bowled over by it. Interesting. All right. 50 was Zach Anderson's number. My number, as you may recall, was 19. And that is, we talked about all the conflicting polls in the Republican and Democratic primaries. 19 is the advantage that President Trump says Ron DeSantis has in the primary. Back on Tuesday night, the president was in West Virginia at a rally, and he brought up his endorsement of Ron DeSantis there in West Virginia, and said that he, meaning DeSantis, was at 3% a few months ago. And then I gave him a nice shot, a nice little tweet, bing, bing. And he went from three.
I love this quote, bing, bing.
Yeah, he said, a nice little tweet, bing, bing. And he went from 3 to like 20 something. And then I gave him my full and total endorsement. And now he's leading by like 19 points. So 19 is the number that President Trump says Ron DeSantis is leading by, or like 19. So, we can add that to the mix of this range of polls that we talked about. And in next week, we will find out which pollster or the president who came closest to nailing it. And that'll be certainly one of the things we talk about in our next podcast. But now we're done for this week. Once again, I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. I've been joined by Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson. And next week, it's my belief that our third member of the podcast team, John Kennedy, the State Capitol Bureau Chief in Tallahassee for Gatehouse, will be joining us again. He's been on assignment this week. So you'll want to be sure to tune in next week. You can find our podcast on iTunes or Google Play, Inside Florida Politics. Thank you.